We've been chewing on unique holiday food traditions the last few weeks. The series led to a discovery for freelancer Caitlin Chetterly. Her husband, Daniel Davis, who's willing to eat almost anything, has an aversion to a certain Christmas treat.
Oh, God, that's easy. Ambrosia salad.
Ambrosia salad sounds like something really yummy. But Dan says that every Christmas, when he and his family piled into the car for the long drive to his mother's family in the mill town of Rumford, Maine, he knew what was waiting for him.
On the table next to the turkey every year was a bowl of green Jell-O with Cool Whip and marshmallows and cherries and pineapple and nuts, and it was the grossest looking tasting thing ever. And it was like eating a mouthful of something squishy and sugary and oddly rather airy. It was just electric green. I mean, what else more do I have to say?
Okay. I needed to go to the source of Dan's Christmas pain. So I called up my mother-in-law, Esther, to ask her if she knew that Dan just hated her Christmas ambrosia salad. She was shocked, which shocked Dan.
Does it surprise you that your mother had no idea that you hated it?
It does. I mean, I thought I always made it very clear that I didn't like it. And at least if by not saying it directly, it was never on my plate.
And what about your brother, the fact that she called him recently to say that Danny hates the ambrosia salad? Did you like it?
Well, I love the fact that he and I never talked about our dislike for the ambrosia salad, but, you know, 30 years later, we both agree that it was the worst thing ever.
So, of course, we had to go to his mother's house to try it.
I have to thin out the cream cheese with pineapple juice so that it will fold into the Cool Whip, and then you add the Jell-O and the pineapple, and you let it sit.
And cherries, too. It has cherries.
Very pretty.
When was the last time you made this?
Probably the last time we had Christmas or Thanksgiving with my family, which was a long time ago. A long time.
It took a while, but finally we were able to cajole Dan into trying it, just to see if he still hated it.
That terrifies me.
Why?
The texture is already, it's like a Hitchcock film where all the perspective shifts and everything's growing in size.
How is it?
It's okay.
Like many of us, Dan has learned that the only way to get through Christmas is to ignore the red, white, and green ambrosia salad jiggling next to the holiday ham and grin gamely. For NPR News, I'm Caitlin Shetterly.
If you really, really want that recipe, it's at NPR.org.
During this holiday season, we've been asking about your favorite holiday foods, and you've sent us notes about dishes like menudo, wassail, ambrosia. And today we turn to Eastern Europe for a cake that is served on New Year's Eve. Reporter Sasha Woodruff tells us about the four-layer rum-soaked tradition.
To celebrate the New Year for as long as I can remember, my mom has baked a cake called a Punschtorte, or as she says it, Punschtorte. It was a tradition started in my mom's family back in the former Czechoslovakia.
At midnight, we pour champagne and had a toast to New Year's, and then we hugged and kissed each other, drank our champagne, and then we ate cold cuts, potato salad, and after that, we had the cake with a little bit of coffee.
It's a pink glazed sponge cake with layers soaked in a rum and citrus syrup. It all starts out with 16, yes, 16 eggs.
8 eggs for the basic dough, and then 8 eggs for the dough we divide in half. Half of it we make pink, and half of we put a cocoa in it, and we make it brown.
You start by separating the yolks from the whites, mixing 3 different cake batters, one white, one pink, one brown. The tradition of serving up this pink glazed torte goes back to my great-grandmother's kitchen in the early 1900s. She ran a restaurant in the next town over, but at home, she made all sorts of extravagant creations without the help of modern machinery.
Well, she made this very similar, except she would blend it and beat it all by hand.
My mother learned to make this cake as a young girl. She was born during the Second World War, and food was scarce. But my family was fortunate enough to have a sprawling garden, so the 16 eggs were a luxury they could afford.
We had chickens and we had goats for milk during the war when they were bombing the town. And so we were able to eat them and enjoy it.
Some of the other ingredients weren't so easy to come by. The cake soaks in a rum punch, which calls for the juice of one lemon and one orange. Finding citrus in this former communist country required both patience and connections.
If you got a one lemon or for a tea, we had to stand in a line for it for 2-3 hours. And if there was news that in this little vegetable store there would be lemons next day, somebody secretly told somebody, and then everybody spread it between their friends, and then everybody lined up in front of the store and waited.
Once the lemons and oranges were acquired, they were squeezed into a cooked sugar syrup. The pink and chocolate cakes were cut into concentric rings and reassembled to look like bull's eyes. The layers were stacked on top of each other and the syrup spooned over top. Then a 24-hour wait. The next day, the cake was glazed with a pink lemon frosting. In the 1940s and 50s, food dyes were not available, but my great-grandmother had a stash hidden away.
She called the food coloring Breton, and now I don't know if it's from Bretagne, from France, or where she was able to buy it, but I know these luxurious things after the war and after the communists took over, they were not available, but a lot of the stuff my grandmother had left from the hotel and the restaurants we had, and we were so excited just to see that lovely pink cake.
For me, the bubblegum-colored frosting isn't the best part of this cake. It's when you cut into it. Thanks to those concentric circles, a dazzling checkerboard appears in each slice. It's best enjoyed with a glass of champagne. For NPR, I'm Sasha Woodruff.
And you can find the recipe for punch tort and other unique holiday foods at NPR.org.
And Linda, I gather you have a much more attractive recipe to share with us.
Well, at least attractive because fast. It's called Lazy Mary's Lemon Tart from the Food 52 Cookbook by Amanda Hesser and Meryl Stubbs. Here's what you need: a blender, a thin-skinned lemon, a stick of butter, 4 large eggs, 1.5 cups of superfine sugar, and 1 teaspoon of vanilla. You chunk everything up, put it in the blender, and whir it till it's pourable. Then pour it into a 9-inch tart shell. Purchased pie crust is fine. Bake at 350 for 30 to 40 minutes, and voila.
Well, that was fast, but did I actually hear you say a whole lemon?
Yeah, pith, peel, the whole thing. This is a very tart tart.
Well, thanks very much, and happy holiday baking, cooking, and eating to all of you from all of us here at Morning Edition.
For many families, celebrating holidays means celebratory food. And celebratory food means going back to flavors and smells that have been in the family for many years. For reporter Alex Schmidt, it's a hybrid of Mexican and Eastern European Jewish food. Recently, she took a trip to discover more about her family's food history.
Food memories are vivid. What you ate as a kid can whisk you right back to that lost time in your life. But for my mom's parents, Martha and Jerry Schneider, one special memory eludes them. It's just on the tip of their tongue.
I don't know either whether it was a special touch or the ingredients, I don't know, but it was, you just wanted to go there, to Justo Sierra, which was...
Justo Sierra was the street in downtown Mexico City where my grandparents say you could eat the best Jewish food in the world. Martha and Jerry spent a big part of their lives in Mexico City, but their families were from Eastern Europe, and that's the kind of food they grew up eating. Soups with noodles in them, baked meat in sauces of caramelized onion. Even when my great-grandfather would visit from New York, he went to Justo Sierra to taste the food of his childhood.
My father went there because he said, just like my mother made, just like my mother made. Whenever he got to Mexico, his first stop was Justo Sierra.
The food conjured distinct, comforting memories for Jews from Eastern Europe who found themselves in strange, foreign Mexico. The funny thing is, for me, my strongest food memory is Mexican food. Every year, when I was growing up, we'd go home to Mexico for Passover. When I eat a spicy turkey sandwich between 2 pieces of matzah, feelings of being surrounded by family in a safe, loving place come simmering up. I wanted to see if I could find this Justo Sierra spot that gave my grandparents those same special feelings about their past. Just one problem: the location.
I don't think it had a name.
So whenever we went there, we never called it by any other name. We just said, let's go to Justo Sierra. That was it.
My maternal grandparents couldn't lead me to the old restaurant. But luckily, my dad's mother still lives in Mexico City. Also luckily, I recently went to visit her. Dora Schmidt, 87 years old, also known as Bobe to her 16 grandchildren. She was born in Poland, but moved to Mexico City when she was 3 years old. She curses at other drivers in Yiddish as she speeds her little red car through wild traffic. When I told her about the Justo Sierra memory that my other grandparents mentioned, she instantly knew what I was talking about.
This was the shul, the biggest temple Ashkenazi that were in Mexico City. And we had over there a caterer that his name was Motel Schlechter. And his wife was the one that she used to cook for all the fairs that are going on there in the shul.
The same people who cooked the food that transported my mom's parents also filled the guests' bellies at Bobe's wedding.
Oh, she used to make broth, chicken broth with kreplach and with all the goodies that the Ashkenazim used to eat with the soup. And she used to make veal with kugeln, so delicious that amazing because I don't think whoever cooks cannot give the flavor that she used to give to the food.
About 100 years ago, the Jewish community was centered here in Mexico City's rowdy downtown. The community started out small with just a few hundred Jews, so everyone knew the place to find the best traditional food in town. Today, Jews have scattered across the city. Most days, the old temple just sits there, empty. On the busy street, you could almost miss the elaborate wooden doors with Jewish stars. It's been decades since my grandmother walked into the temple where she got married.
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing. It's so thrilled that I can't believe myself that I'm here 65 years later. Something believable. De veras es tan emocionante.
There are old black and white photographs in the temple. In one of them, my Bobe pointed out the legendary chefs standing in the back row.
Alex. Ese es Motel.
¿Cuál?
Este es Motel con su señora.
They were the ones that used to make the food.
Ese es Motel con su señora.
Motele is wearing a black hat, and Etel is in a plaid apron. They look serious, like people in old black and white photos do. It turns out that black and white photographs and 50-year-old grease stains on the walls in the old kitchen would be the closest I'd get to the fabled recipes. Only one of the Schlechter's children got married. And believe me, I know this is a sad and strange twist, but their lone grandchild killed his parents, and he went to jail. As far as I can tell, the recipes just didn't survive through the generations for us to learn how the Schlechters gave their food its special flavor.
Would you like to know what Etel's secret was?
Oh, yes, I would. I would love to ask her, but I don't know if she will tell me. You know, a lot of people has their own secrets, like me.
My grandmother likes to play at being mysterious, but she did let me and my sister take a video of her cooking in her little apartment.
12 tablecloths of...
Tablespoons.
Tablespoons of confectionery.
Okay.
Yeah?
Okay. See? She showed us how to make delicate horseshoe-shaped walnut cookies, typically served at Mexican weddings. As far back as I can remember, she served them at Shabbat dinner, alongside Jewish mandelbrot pastries.
Okay, a mano?
Sí. ¿Te las lavaste?
Sí.
For a snack, Bobe fried up rinds of chicken fat with onions, shtetl style, and put them in a taco with guacamole and chile. As I watched her through the camera, flavors and memories mixed together in layers. The Eastern Europe of my great-grandparents and the taste of home in Mexico City. For NPR News, I'm Alex Schmidt.